Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to the A24 project here on the Nerd Party, the only podcast that takes you through the entire back catalogue of A24 films, two films at a time every fortnight, alongside interviews with the people behind the movies. On today's episode, we discuss Slice and the Children Act. I'm your co-host Dallas King, and with me in the pod booth, as always, is Lee Hutchison. How are you? Ready for some za?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. Sometimes it's, it'll be an interesting double bill, that's for sure.
Absolutely, and we're going to try and do this in the style of a pizza delivery company, i.e. in 30 minutes or less. What that has to say about how much we'll have to talk about the films, I'll leave that up to your judgment. But first up, as always, is A24 Hour News, and it's kind of quite barren on the news front at the moment, with the only real news coming in the form of the coronavirus. Yes, the coronavirus. It's even affecting A24, it's terrible. Because due to the outbreak, the South by Southwest Festival has been cancelled, and with it the world premiere of David Lowry's The Green Knight. We are yet to find out where that's going to be rescheduled, but I imagine it will probably be outside of a festival and perhaps a bit closer to May. But, clearly they did have strong, hopes for this film, debuting it, in mid-March, over 2 months out of that one. But I guess we'll have to see where that one lands. And also, given MGM's decision that means Bond has moved to November, No Time to Die equals More Time to Die, and this has meant that A24 are pitching in and switching St. Maud to the April 10th date, which Bond did hold, in order to take that big Easter slot. Ambitious? What do you make of that news, Lee?
Yeah, I'm a huge James Bond fan, so that news kind of really hit me hard. Then my marathon was cancelled, so it's kind of all going to hell, really, for me at the moment.
Well, my Japan trip is looking decidedly dodgy as well, so I guess we might end up just spending, 14 days in self-isolation watching more A24 films.
Exactly. Just think about the amount of podcasts that we could produce. We could probably just get this podcast series all finished and dusted over a long weekend in self-isolation.
Exactly. Self-isolation, it can't stop the podcasters of the world. It can't stop us. But, what do you make of the fact that A24 are stealing the Bond slot and going for Easter weekend in the States, Because they did, I think it was April 3rd was their original slot for St. Maud. So they're pitching in and taking it, perhaps expanding the number of screens. Whether anyone turns out to go into those screens is another matter altogether. But what do you make of their ambition on this one?
Well, St. Maud is, a British film, so I think it could be argued that it's paying Bond some tribute by keeping the British end up during the Easter break in America. I think American audiences are in for a real treat with this film. It was definitely one of the highlights of last year for me. It just was screened at the Glasgow Film Festival to quite a bit of acclaim as well. So I think that, it's not going to be a 3-hour Bond epic, a culmination of a series of films that Daniel Craig has starred in that has, double the lifespan of the A24, but I think people are going to get a treat with St. Maud.
It's just played in the Glasgow Film Festival here, and word out of that was very strong as well, so I think this one's going to do. It fits in perfectly with their elevated horror films, again, with the inverted commas that you can't see, but alongside Hereditary, when we did saw it, I think we both sort of saw elements of sort of First Reformed and The Witch, so I think this is going to be another slam dunk for A24, and I managed to have a very tiny brief conversation with Rose Glass at an event at the Glasgow Film Festival after an industry event, and she was talking about, I don't think she was really aware of the full extent of the fandom of A24, and I asked her if the shop had approached her yet with ideas for maybe the sort of Virgin Mary figures but in the style of St. Maud, and she thought it might be fun to get one of the Virgin Mary lighters but with St. Maud on it, so hopefully she'll go to them next week and pitch some much needed merch to keep the British end up as it was.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. The A24 lighters in their early sort of shop days were pretty popular, so this could be sort of the nice complement to that.
I do. I actually have an A24 lighter. It was given to me free, complimentary, when I bought a jumper. So I still have that. Lucy tries to light candles, non-A24 candles, but she's always trying to light candles with it. I'm like, no, leave it. I don't want it ever to run out, you know. So, but one thing that will not run out is Lee's interviews with the stars. You know, he's been beavering away, sliding into DMs on Instagram and Twitter, and providing a load of content for you guys out there. So Lee, do you want to tease up who we might be hearing from quite soon?
Yeah, so we've got a new one to announce. We announced a whole bunch of them on our last episode, but this is a guy that's been on my wish list for a while. And we've got Jake Ryan, who plays Gabe from 8th grade on recently. So I interviewed him on Sunday. So that episode's going to drop in a few months' time. So Gabe is sort of one of the most unforgettable kind of characters in sort of recent A24 films. So it was really good to kind of talk with him about that. And yeah, next week we've got an interview, and I think it's a pretty cool one, actually. So we've got Kyle Newman, who directed Barely Lethal, which was a film that we were quite mixed on, or had, you know, we weren't the most positive in the world about it. But I had a really good chat with him, and he was able to kind of give us a really good insight into kind of behind the scenes on the making of this film. And, you know, he's a successful director in his own right. He's directed videos for Lana Del Rey, Taylor Swift, which are like huge events in themselves. So here's a little preview of next week's interview with Kyle. The film kind of really stands out when I watched it. It's like, it really stands out from, say, some of the other A24 films, in the respect that it feels like this larger than life action premise. But then it also, you think, well, actually, it feels like it perfectly belongs within this filmography, with this, you know, as you mentioned, this coming of age story of a young woman. And that's something that they tend to see and look for in their films. Was that a kind of mix that appealed to you as well, to be able to tell both an action story, but something, as you say, something so sweet too?
Yes, I wanted the movie to remain innocent. I wanted the movie to play to a younger crowd. And it's unfortunate maybe it didn't find that exact crowd. It's rare you see Sam Jackson interacting with a bunch of, you know, 7 or 8 year olds. And it's rare you see him in anything that's this light, you know. And he was just a joy around an inspiration, a lot of these young actors. He was really opened up to them. He'd really collaborate with them. He was ever present. You know, he even gave us an extra day of shooting because he really loved what we were doing and the vibe of it all. And I knew we were never going to be able to do full justice to the action, you know, and I knew that wasn't the point of the movie. The point was that's the world she came from. And I just needed enough to authenticate that. You know, unfortunately, like I said, all that stuff largely got cut, but you just want to know that this is the serious world she came from. This is why she's escaping, and this is how intense it can be. And then to be thrown into something that was so different and alien that you just can't really prepare for or study before you get there. So it was that contrast. And as soon as I heard A24 was interested, I mean, I'm a huge fan of A24. They're one of the few brands, I think, that actually curates impeccably. And they have an identity to them, you know, in the way that very few other studios and distributors do. I feel like there's a lot of let's throw whatever's cool at festivals this year. Let's collect some of them and throw it against the wall. But they actually have a very specific type of tone. And I was surprised that they were interested in the movie. And I flew out and I talked to the guys. And I was like, I thought it was a joke at first. I'm like, what? And they're like, no, we're trying to do different stuff. I mean, we can't only do one type of thing. We don't only want to do one type of thing. And this movie has a different energy to it. And it can do a different type of business for us. So I was excited about that. I was just unfortunate that the collaboration was truncated, because we had such like a problematic financier who, you know, couldn't fulfill his obligations as a distributor as well, but was also really difficult about passing the baton to them. And they had some awesome ideas on marketing and posters and things, but like I said, a lot of that stuff, you know, it could only have surfaced by the time we were getting to streaming and home video and things, not in the initial release and collaboration, because there was just a lot of stuff. The assets just had to be carried over for what was previously developed. So It, I think because it was an A24 movie and it didn't have enough time for them to kind of position it in a way to say, no, this is something different, people just put it through the lens of, well, this doesn't feel like normal A24, so it's just a bad version of this. And while the movie's not perfect in any respects, I feel like, you know, my issue was I just wish it had the platform to go out there so it could market it, so you could put the idea into people's head that, no, this is never intended to be Hannah. Hannah's Hannah. I like Hannah, but this is clearly not Hannah. There's a reason why we cast it and has a certain tone to it and a certain style to it that's not these other movies that it invariably got associated and compared with. So, it was a tricky process, you know, but I feel like they did the best they could considering the window we had and you know what it was, and I kind of had to reintroduce Haley to the world because she didn't have much else out there, and I think people are expecting Sam Jackson to be one way in a movie, you know, and he's never cursing or having a certain intensity, which he does so well. So I think people bring some notions to the table and they're like, well, that's not what it's supposed to be. So that was unfortunate, you know, and in this whole process. But it was good to play with genres and balance between them and try to balance really extreme tones that don't often go together.
So there's Kyle. So that's, yeah, definitely one to look forward to next week.
Absolutely, because like you say, it was nice that he came on the podcast, because I think you got in touch with him after the episode had gone out, and I think he'd actually heard it. But it was great that he was still willing to sort of come on and talk about the process and everything like that. So really looking forward to listening to the full interview next week. Yeah. But of course, you know, we have two films to discuss on this episode, and the first one is going to be Slice, written and directed by Austin Vecelli. This is his first feature film after cutting his teeth on music videos for Chance the Rapper. In a spooky small town, when a slew of pizza delivery boys are slain on the job, two daring survivors set out to catch the culprits behind the cryptic crime spree. Stars Chance the Rapper, Zazie Beetz, Paul Scheer and Joe Keery. So Lee, did this film deliver, or did it New York fold under pressure?
I am someone that doesn't particularly enjoy pizza like the next day or anything like that. I have to have it fresh.
It's the
at the
best
time.
Takeaway to have the next day. It's the best takeaway to have.
See, it never kind of works for me. So this was a repeat viewing for me, and yeah, I think this works probably would work really well as sort of like a web series or something like that. Like, I think they have a really interesting kind of concept with this town that sort of like has like 40,000 ghost citizens in it. And I think there's like an interesting concept there to be had. But at 83 minutes, it feels like it's stretched out far too far. And I think the highlights are sort of like the little vignettes where they have these little kind of adverts for sort of like the pizza slices and how it works with this like place with the ghosts and everything like that. It was a film that watch on repeat. I was just like, oh, it's okay. It was just not that great. But one thing that did stand out for me when I was kind of paying close attention to the credits was that Ludwig Göransson, hopefully I pronounced that correctly, was the guy who scored this film. And in less than sort of just over a sort of year and a half from kind of making Slice, you know, a film that sort of has probably ended up on sort of A24's direct TV kind of deal, you know, people are maybe seeing it for like 99 cents or something like that, he has gone on to be the person that's replaced Hans Zimmer for Christopher Nolan on Tenet, because Zimmer wanted to focus on Dune. So I thought that was a really interesting kind of career journey, that in this film, which is, you know, mixed to say the least, that someone has really kind of burst out of this film and really kind of gone from strength to strength.
Yeah, I didn't actually realise that. I mean, the score itself was actually, I thought it was good, you know, it certainly set the tone and the right sort of atmosphere and sort of what the film was going for, with this sort of slightly heightened, weird sort of, for me, it kind of felt like a I think, like you say, a web series might have been better because it does feel sort of like an episode of like Buffy or Supernatural, with the sort of two things that came to mind. Like you say, with this world where there are ghosts and sort of humans and werewolves all living together, apparently supposed to be in perfect harmony, but of course, you know, things happen. Otherwise, you know, if there's no conflict, then you don't really have a film, do you? So yeah, you need that kind of conflict. But I mean, you know, also, you know, this film came out probably, was it about 2018? So you're looking at, you know, Zazie Beetz, of course, has gone on to huge things since, you know, appearing in Joker and the like, and Deadpool as well. So, you know, she's really, you know, come out on this. But I think when you were saying that it could have been a web series, but, you know, at 83 minutes, it felt stretched. I had the exact same feeling that this was an 83-minute film which felt longer, and that's not a compliment. You know, it was just really the pacing of it. I found the problem, it just never really going. But I think the problem, one of the major problems I had with this was there didn't seem to be a real definitive lead character in who you were following on this journey. It kind of sort of bounced between a couple of the pizza delivery people, and then it was this reporter who was investigating the crimes, and then when Chance the Rapper, who I have no idea, I mean, I'm assuming that if he was not a rapper and was a plumber, he would have been called Chance the Plumber. I don't know. But then he sort of turns up halfway through, and then he sort of becomes the lead for a while. It also felt sort of very messy, and I think, yeah, like you say, a web series where you had many episodes following different characters and then all culminating and tying together in this finale, I think might have worked a bit better. Do you think?
Yeah, I think so too. And I'm the same as you. Like, when I was kind of got to the end of the film, I was confused at who the main character was as well. And it just seemed, I think that's again where we're tied into that web series, that you could have maybe had, you know, maybe 5 or 6 10-minute episodes or something like that, focused on different people sort of within this town, you know, whether it's the journalist, employees at Perfect Pizza Base, the ghosts, you know, the Big Cheese, you know, all these sorts of characters. I think they really kind of, I think that would have been a more innovative kind of way to present this story and to maybe take away the problem of a lack of a sort of main character or focus.
Yeah, because another film it kind of reminded me of was Bright. I'm not sure, did you watch that when it came on Netflix? It's a film where, you know, you had orcs and elves and humans who were all battling together, but then had come to a truce and then were living side by side, and then of course something happens which then creates the tension. So it felt kind of like that as well. So I'm assuming this was A24's Bright, and that they thought that this could have been maybe something, but then just it didn't really work for me. You know, it's part horror, part comedy, but wasn't either scary enough or funny enough to really work as either, or and certainly not together as well. I mean, you had Chris Parnell, who's, you know, done Saturday Night Live and is very funny. He's on Rick and Morty as well as the dad, and you know, he had some good moments, but other than that, it just felt very, also felt kind of like, it reminded me like of like a Kevin Smith film. Like if he had done like a fantasy thing, this is the kind of thing I could, maybe because it was all sort of set around a sort of pizza place, it just happens to be set on a Hellmouth, which is why I thought of Buffy as well. It felt like it was pulling from a lot of different things, but it was never greater than the sum of its parts, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And I, you know, the only bit that sort of, you know, it just, yeah, it wasn't a good film. And I think, yeah, I can see why they would invest in this film and to distribute it, but yeah, it just sort of doesn't sort of seem to fit in too well with their filmography very well. It seems just sort of a bit of an anomaly.
Yeah, no, I think it was, you know, you've got this, I think Zazie Beetz and both Chance the Rapper were in, I think it's Atlanta, the Donald Glover series. I've never seen it myself. I think it is available on BBC iPlayer at the moment. It's just one I've never got around to checking out, but I think it's clearly sort of working with those guys in order to tap into that market. I'm sure it's the kind of film which will get like a cult following, you know, it'll be one of these sort of stoner comedies that people watch late at night while, of course, eating pizza or other takeaways are available. But yeah, I'm sure it'll work with like a beer and pizza night. It'll be that kind of thing that people sort of will find its audience. But as a sort of mainstream A24 film. Again, this was one that in the UK didn't get a release. We had to go to US iTunes to find it, which is always the question mark of why it never came across the pond. But yeah, I think it was an interesting idea. I just think it was a concept that was maybe slightly wasted in the end, and there could have been something, like you say, really interesting here. It just didn't really work for me.
Yeah, but fingers crossed the next film is a huge improvement.
Absolutely. The sequel, another slice. But the next film that we're going to be talking about is going to be The Children Act, and this is based on a novel by Ian McEwan and is directed by Richard Eyre, stars Emma Thompson, Stanley Tucci and Fionn Whitehead. As her marriage flounders, a judge must decide a case involving a teenage boy who is refusing a blood transfusion on religious principles. So Lee, give me your verdict. Was it a class act, or did you find it in contempt of court?
I've mentioned this as a issue sometimes on the podcast before, when there comes discussion about A24 films. I mean, there are in and around 100 A24 films, and sometimes you'll see discussions going like the best A24 film, and you know, you recognize the usual thing, and then you'll get like the worst A24 films, and it'll be like, oh, I didn't like Ghost Story, or Spring Breakers is overhyped. And it's like, guys, would probably recommend you maybe check out some of their other kind of films, you know, not just the usual sort of five or six that people associate. I genuinely believe, and I've sort of reflected on this, I thought it before going into this rewatch, and the rewatch kind of has solidified it for me, that this is the worst A24 film. I genuinely despise this film, and I struggled through the rewatch of it. This is it's absolutely ghastly, Dallas. It should be sentenced to life imprisonment. Please tell me you thought better of it for, you know, balance.
I didn't think very highly of it. You would send this one straight to the electric chair or the gas chamber, would you? No chance, yes, of parole. No chance of any sort of a. Yeah. This was an incredibly dull film to watch, I have to say. There was no real sense of urgency or conflict. The main sort of, I thought this was going to be a film about this judgment. It was going to take the whole film. It would end on the judgment. It's no spoilers really to say that the judgment happens around 20 minutes in, and then it follows the relationship between Emma Thompson's judge and the boy played by Fionn Whitehead, who was in the lead in Dunkirk and in Black Mirror, the Bandersnatch episode as well. The top three actors they have are all very good. They just don't seem to have anything really to work with. You know, I got the DVD for this out of the library, and it was covered in four-star reviews from the likes of The Sun, The Daily Mirror. They called it Emma Thompson's finest performance. How does that make you feel?
So why can't we get the bung money for something like that? I'd gladly whore myself out for like £500 to say this was A24's best film, but people haven't paid up the money.
No. So I mean, what would you say was Emma Thompson's finest performance? Off the top of your
head. I'll be honest, I am not the biggest fan of Emma Thompson. I respect her as an actress, but I've really struggled to kind of warm to her.
I respect her as an actress. That's like you say, I she has my complete and total support, like a football chairman saying that a manager has his complete and total support 2 days before he then fires him. It's like, yeah, it sounds like you're not a big fan. And I have to say that this film was all the way heading for a one star from me until the final scene. And Emma Thompson proved why she is a fantastic actress. She saved it from a one star and turned it into a two star in the final scene. It was like, it was the equivalent of her saving, basically providing a bit of grit and gravitas to Love Actually, the scene where she has to cry, does a lonely cry in a room after getting a Joni Mitchell CD, and then has to act all sort of happy and stuff in front of her husband and kids and things like that. It was that good. It made me feel something, which till that point the rest of the film had not. And it's really weird because, you know, when you've got two central conflicts, you've got a marriage which is disintegrating, Stanley Tucci playing nice, amiable Stanley Tucci, sort of telling his wife he's going to have an affair, not he's having an affair, but purely out of respect and love for her, he's saying, we're not having sex anymore and I'm going to have an affair because we don't do it. You know, you can either be okay with it or hate it, but this is going to happen. And she's like, what? And then you should have a lot more tension and drama there. There isn't really any. And then you've got the sort of subplot where she's telling this, you know, she decides that this Jehovah's Witness boy must have a blood transfusion in order to survive because he is a minor. And then he becomes obsessed with her and starts questioning his religion and stuff. And I thought at some point there could have maybe been a really good film here where he like turns into a dangerous stalker. It doesn't go down that road. There's no real justification for her interest in the boy and the relationship that develops. If there had been some sort of history where Stanley Tucci and Emma Thompson's characters perhaps had tried for a child but couldn't have one, or had had a son but he died in an accident, I could understand why she was having this relationship with the boy and her interest in him. But without that, there was no reason, and I just couldn't buy into it. It did make me think of another film. I think you could probably chime in on this one. It's not one I've seen, but I know that you recommended it really highly. It was Apostasy. You've seen that one, haven't you? And I think that sort of dealt with a similar topic, didn't it? With the sort of Jehovah's Witnesses and dealing with a blood transfusion or something, did it?
Yeah, I'm glad to kind of talk about this film instead, perhaps. But Apostasy was a fantastic British film that came out maybe a good few, just a few months before sort of the Children Act, very much similar to Bug's Life and Ants and Armageddon and Deep Impact. You know, you wait for one Jehovah's Witness film based in the UK and two come along in the same calendar year. I really liked Apostasy. It deals with someone like a family member that is being very faithful to their religion and refusing a blood transfusion, even though it could ultimately mean their end of their life. And it was such a gripping, well-told story and kind of takes you behind the scenes in the church there. The problem I have with this film, and whether it's the court setting, the acting from the lawyers, is that it's just a lot of people telling you things and screeching things at the screen. And I just found it quite the central performance really of, you know, Emma Thompson is, yeah, it's fine. Stanley Tucci, you know, as you say, he's just a nice kind of guy that's just plods around. He, you know, pretty unforgettable. But I thought Fionn Whitehead as this Jehovah's Witness was painful to watch. I think it's definitely one of the worst acting performances. You know, I don't know how much of it's him or a pretty poor script or a painfully annoying character in the form of Adam, but I just hated everything that character did, like following her all the way to sort of Newcastle in the rain. I was following you and then you got on at King's Cross and then I jumped on the train, and it's just like everything he did was just like, I hate you. And I find the first half of the film was like bearable, but when he sort of enters the fray and sort of what he does was even worse. And then on top of that, I find it that the amount of this film that's dedicated to Emma Thompson and her, you know, a fellow lawyer working on their musical performance on the piano and singing for like Christmas carols and stuff, I just did not want to be around any of these people whatsoever. I wanted to go off and have an affair with the Apostasy film instead of the Children Act. That's what happened.
Well, I think, yeah, we're definitely going to be recommending Apostasy rather than this film. Obviously, it's not an A24 film, so, you know, it won't be part of the project. But, I mean, it's always good to be able to recommend other films for people to go out and check out. But, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. The performance of Whitehead as Adam, I think it's, you know, he was good in Dunkirk. Again, maybe that was because it was quite a silent...
He didn't open his mouth.
It was very much a silent performance. But I think it really comes down to the script on this. And it does make me wonder what the filmmakers saw in the original book that they said, oh, this would make a fantastic film. Because it certainly doesn't. There's no tension. There's no real drama. It's all very matter of fact. And, you know, you would expect a lot more drama to be coming out of this. You know, there's the parents who are essentially the ones that have basically, you know, the court seems to believe it was almost brainwashed their child into believing this. You know, they sort of disappear halfway through once the verdict is gone. And that's the, like Apostasy, like you say, that's the more interesting relationship is the relationship where the boy has lost his faith, essentially, and is at odds with his parents, and for some reason wants to move in with Emma Thompson and Stanley Tucci. It doesn't. It's like he kisses her, but he sees her as a mother figure, but then almost as a romantic figure. And it's just, yeah, it's just a complete mess of a film. And yeah, if it wasn't for that sort of final scene where Emma Thompson sort of breaks down and sort of talks to and hints at a possible reconciliation with Stanley Tucci, that, you know, the film has any sort of class and dignity. But then it also just ends, and I really sort of want to go onto Wikipedia and check out the book. I probably should have done it before the podcast, really, to do my full and diligent research, but to actually find out if the book differs in any way from the film, because the ending is just sort of like, oh, is that it? I thought there was going to be more to it, and there wasn't, and it just, yeah, kind of fizzled out like a balloon slowly exhaling and then sort of falling to the floor. I think, yeah, it was just a massive wet blanket of a film.
Yeah, it's you know, I wonder how it would have been any different if Ian McEwan, who wrote the book and then adapted it for the screen, was maybe replaced by someone with maybe less attachment to the film. I'm not too sure.
He did the screenplay. I see. I think it's always very tricky when the writer of the book does the screenplay as well. I think it can work occasionally. I think it was Gillian Flynn did Gone Girl, and I thought that was fantastic. Of course, when you've got a director like David Fincher directing it as well, obviously, you know, you that's good. But yeah, no, this was just a dull, wet disappointment. And yeah, I think, yeah, we both almost seem quite angry about the film. I mean, I don't know if it will replace Revenge of Green Dragons at the bottom of my list because of just that single moment with Emma Thompson at the end. But I take it, it seems clear to me from you, what you're saying is that this ranks clearly quite far at the bottom with a large gap between that and everything else. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's in and around sort of like some other kind of films, but I think this one just ultimately, for like Revenge of the Green Dragon, if I was forced to watch another one again, I'd go, you know what, there'll be some action in it, I can watch that on a Tuesday afternoon or something like that. Like, I would pick that. With The Children Act, it was bad enough having to watch it twice and stuff like that. I think I would just be quite content to put one on in the background over the other.
Well, that, I guess, brings us nicely to the end. Children Act will not be getting a glowing recommendation from us, but if you are listening and joining in the project with us and watching it, going through all of the A24 films, then unfortunately, yes, you will have to watch this one as well. But, you know, if you want to let us know what you think of that film and of the A24 project, you can always pop over to iTunes and leave us a review, or you can chat to us on social media. Lee, where will they be able to talk to you about the Children Act?
Yeah, you can find me at Twitter at Lee Hutchison _.
And you can get me at Dallas King 1138. So on next week's episode, Lee, of course, we've got Lee's interview with Cal Newman, but we will both be back in 2 weeks' time when we'll be discussing Jonah Hill's directorial debut, Mid-90s, and the Australian crime drama Outlaws. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.